It's rivalry week. Virginia Tech and UVA didn't play last year, so there should be plenty of juice when the teams meet up Saturday in Charlottesville. We'll talk about all that and more this week on Teal and Barton. Welcome to episode 126 of Teal and Barber, our UVA, Virginia Tech, and ACC sports podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your favorite pods. I'm Mike Barber, ACC beat writer for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and joining me as always, my co-host, the 14-time sports writer of the year and the Virginia Sports Hall of Famer, Mr. David Teal. David, good morning and happy almost Thanksgiving.
Yes, Thanksgiving Eve, and to you and yours, Mike.
Where does the Teal family celebrate the Big Turkey Day?
At my mother-in-law's house. And folks all come over there, and we'll be there, I would imagine, from noonish on.
That's a full day. My Thanksgiving is always dictated by the football schedule. So the years that UVA goes to Tech, we just keep it small. But years like this, where UVA's got the home game, since we live in Charlottesville, the whole Barber family kind of descends upon Charlottesville, and we'll be hosting them all here at the house tomorrow, and that should hopefully be a fun day. It's always interesting when you get that many people together, but everybody's chipping in, David, this year. So I'm doing the turkey and probably the green bean casserole, but all the family members have picked side dishes. So a little off my plate, stuff that will then end up back on my plate to eat. who does all the cooking for you guys?
It is a tag team effort as well. My brother-in-law cooks the turkey, and my wife does the mashed potatoes. And gosh, my sister-in-law brings the desserts. My mother-in-law makes the green bean casserole and sweet potato casserole. So it truly is a family effort.
So one of the many wonderful things about getting married was, in addition to my stuff and your stuff, and we put it together and it's our stuff, and now you have all this stuff, our Thanksgiving menu, instead of taking my favorites from my family and her favorites from her family, we've sort of put it all together. So there are more dishes now on the Thanksgiving table than even when I was growing up, which, as a guy who loves to cook and even more than that loves to eat, Thanksgiving is maybe my favorite holiday of the year.
Well, we're going to enjoy ours, that's for sure. There will be no shortage of victuals.
I love it. Enjoy. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. And then, as I mentioned, in town this week, because Virginia Tech UVA, that game is in Charlottesville. David, these teams didn't play a year ago because of the tragedy at Virginia with the shooting. That would have been the first time for Tony Elliott at Virginia and Brent Pry at Tech to go head-to-head in the rivalry as head coaches. With everything going on at the two programs, the sort of rebuilding with the new coaches, missing last year, this feels, in my opinion, like almost the ultimate reset in the rivalry. Like there's a very clear, this is a new chapter. Do you get that vibe? And do you think it's going to add some juice to Saturday's game?
Absolutely, I do, Mike. I think it is the dawn of a new era in this rivalry, much like it was when Bronco Mendenhall and Justin Fuente took over the respective programs at the same year. It's uncanny how it worked out, how Bronco and Justin exited in far different circumstances, but they basically went simultaneously. And now Tony Elliott and Brent Pry arrive. And I think what adds to it even further is that these two have a genuine regard for one another that goes back to the time when Tony Elliott and John Pry, Brent's brother, were assistant coaches together at South Carolina State in 2006 and 7. And the families know one another. And certainly Tony Elliott has gone out of his way to thank Virginia Tech and Brent Pry for how they stepped up and how they supported Virginia in the wake of last year's tragedy. And of course, the folks at Virginia Tech have a keen appreciation for what the folks at UVA were enduring. But I think it's drawn Pry and Elliott closer. Do they want to compete on the recruiting trail on the football field? Absolutely. And do they trade barbs about who owns the state? And all? Sure, that's all part of it. But at the end of it, I think these are two men, two coaches who genuinely respect one another.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think to me, that's the perfect rivalry, right? Yeah. Like there is all of this. There's certainly animosity from the fans, right? And there's all the usual stuff that comes along with that. There's fire and quotes coming out from both sides of the players. They get really into it. The game, I think, is going to be very emotional, hotly contested. But the fact that there is that underlying respect, I think, for me, it adds even more to the rivalry. Certainly, maybe there's better storylines if there's two coaches who hate each other, or if it's, Steve Spurrier jabbing Tennessee, that stuff's gold. But for a rivalry we cover every year, the honest respect and admiration on top of the intense competition, I think makes it really exciting. The thing that makes it really exciting, David, is I think it's a massive game program building for both of these guys. I think if Tony Elliott could win, the momentum they end the year with, the upswing they're on, that really talks about the trajectory of the program. And then for Pry, a win makes them bowl eligible, and I think is a huge step for him in his program and where they want to be. So David, on the field, this game feels, it's probably hyperbolic and overstating to say, but it feels like 2 or 3 years from now, we could be looking back at this Saturday and saying, this is where program A took off, or this is where program B fell off. And I think that's very possible. Am I crazy?
No, I don't think you're crazy. I don't think it's necessarily so. I don't think the stakes are quite that drastic. Whoever loses is not sentenced to irrelevance, and whoever wins is not assured of all of a sudden being in the upper tier of the ACC very quickly. But I do think there's something to be said for momentum. And Mike, I think both of them, if you look big picture, can lay claim to having at least some degree of momentum. We're talking about two programs that were 1-6 in the ACC last season. Virginia Tech's already won four games, could go from 1-6 to 5-3. That's a hell of a jump. In Virginia, if Virginia wins, Mike, they started 0-5. To go from 0-5 to 4-8, that's a heck of an accomplishment. I went back and looked at numbers yesterday. Virginia is the 25th team in ACC history to start 0-5. Only one other team has started 0-5 and won at least four games, or won four games. That was Wake Forest in 1967. Been a long time.
It's before I was born. So I think that is, you're absolutely right. Like, really encouraging on both sides. It's always hard to ask this, but who does this game mean more to? Right. Again, we talk about Tech bowl eligibility. We talk about UVA trying to end, what had been a terrible start to the season. Who is this game more important for?
The Hokies. Because of the bowl eligibility, and because this is the second consecutive week that bowl eligibility has been there for the taking. They had their best performance of the year at Boston College. They go for 600 yards, most yards against a Power Five in 30 years. Highest scoring ACC road game since they put a 50 spot on Virginia way back when. So all of a sudden they're sitting there at 5-5 and just need to beat either NC State at home or Virginia on the road to get bowl eligible. Well, to my mind, they were strangely lethargic in losing to NC State last week, 35-28 at home on senior day before a sold out crowd. And now if they were to lose to Virginia, I think it would be more discouraging for Virginia Tech to lose on Saturday than it would be for UVA.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. They both have a lot to gain. It feels like Tech has more to lose in this matchup.
Yes.
So let's look at the matchup itself. And these are two teams, David. They look really different right now than when we saw them in their first and second ball games. Personnel has changed. Some scheme things have changed. The way they're executing and playing has changed. So as you look at this game, what are the key areas, the key matchups that are going to determine the outcome Saturday?
Can Virginia stop Virginia Tech from running the football? Because I believe the Hokies coaching staff is going to look at that Georgia Tech game from a few weeks ago at Scott Stadium, where the Yellow Jackets ran roughshod over the Cavaliers. And they're going to try to mimic that. Because, last week, Bashaul Tutin had two touches. That's inexcusable and inexplicable. And Brent Pry admitted as much yesterday when he talked to us on Zoom. So the Hokies are going to feed him the rock, and they're going to try to run it at UVA. Can the Cavaliers stop that? And then I think on the flip side is, can Virginia Tech slow down Anthony Calandria's running the football? Because they certainly couldn't slow down Brennan Armstrong. And then the UVA version of KC Concepcion at NC State, and that's Malik Washington, who is KC Concepcion on steroids, not figuratively, not literally, mind you.
We're going to be
But
getting calls from their SID.
exactly. I mean, Malik Washington's a legit All-American, dude. I mean, he's off the charts good, and he's the guy that Virginia Tech has to contain.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And you wrote about it this week. It doesn't usually happen, though, where the exact thing that exposes you is then on the schedule the next week.
Right?
Usually it's a callback and you have to say, hey, remember in week three what we did wrong? Here's that film we got. And here you got a chance to go out, fail, and spend the week directly addressing because it does translate so well. Now, I don't know. There's two ways to look at that, right? If you're a Virginia Tech person, you say, okay, we've seen the weakness. We've seen what didn't work. We can address it. If you're a UVA fan, you say, look, they can't cover this. This is a good place to attack. It's going to be really interesting. And I think one of the things that I'm excited about in this particular matchup, and we've talked on this show a lot about how Virginia Tech was just devoid of playmakers a year ago. It feels like both of these teams have guys who are playmakers, and that shows up in rivalry games. You mentioned Malik Washington. I'm thinking about Daquan Felton and Jalen Lane. You mentioned Bashaul Tutin for Tech, Calandria for UVA. There's guys offensively who are going to make plays, but there's guys defensively. We've talked so much about Antoine Powell-Ryland and his ability coming off the edge, and there are great individual athletes and playmakers. And certainly we would have loved to have seen these teams play last year for a million reasons, not the least of which is that would have meant, maybe that
Right.
tragedy never happens. But I think last year's matchup football wise might have been a little vanilla. This one, I feel like there's some pop and there are some guys who are going to make this an exciting game.
I agree. And what many of those guys you named have in common is that they're transfers. And yeah, we harp on it all the time. But Mike, think about this. The entire season, a returning Virginia Tech player who signed with the Hokies out of high school has accounted for one touchdown. Every other touchdown scored by a Hokie this season has been scored by a transfer. It took until the Boston College game, the 10th game of the regular season, for Malachi Thomas to become the first high school signee to score a touchdown for the Hokies this season.
That's absolutely wild. I mean, it's
Right?
absolutely like, and we all knew, I think we all knew how big an impact transfers were having. But when you say that, I mean, that is just ridiculous. And certainly on the Virginia side, you think about Malik Washington and
Washington.
some of these other people, like it really is. It'll be interesting to see long term in college football what that does to rivalries, right? Because I spoke with Aaron Famui for a story on him, senior day kind of feature. He's been at Virginia for 6 years, and beating Virginia Tech means the world to him, that matchup, because he's been through it and he's been in it.
Right.
And I wonder, and maybe positive, maybe negatively, how it impacts the rivalry that so many of these guys aren't steeped in it. And, you know, some of them are coming from other rivalries, rivalries they took a part in. Some of them are just not really attached to any particular rivalry. I wonder if that will up the level of execution, but down the level of emotion in these rivalry games nationwide, really.
Yes, I think that's a great point. And they're just not as invested in the rivalry, and in large degree, perhaps because they didn't grow up with it, not from Virginia, whereas Virginia and Virginia Tech are going to recruit the state's high schools when they hit the portal. Who knows where these guys went to high school? Probably not, in most cases, Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, you think about the most high-profile Virginia guys they brought back, like a Malcolm Green from Richmond or Tony Musket from, and those guys are not playing massive roles. You know, Musket got hurt. Green's been disappointing. So you're right. I mean, the guys who are playing the big roles are from other places and played other places. That being said, I think there's a little edge to UVA there in that this is their final ball game. They know that. Virginia Tech, they go into it hoping it's not their final ball game, but they have to make sure that happens. It's going to be a really interesting matchup. What do you see in terms of the improvement from Virginia, and does it translate to this particular matchup with Tech?
I think it could, Mike. One quick correction. I did misspeak because I forgot that Xavion Turner Bradshaw, who was a high school signee for the Hokies, did score last week against NC State.
So they've got two.
Yes.
A whopping
I need to correct myself. And Mike, but back to your question on Virginia's improvement. Number one, I think it's very notable that Anthony Calandria had his first turnover-free game. Well, in relief in Tennessee, I know he didn't turn up. But in terms of a starter and when he's playing the full game, no turnovers against Duke. That's huge, because we all remember how he had that fourth quarter turnover bug that just crippled the Cavaliers on a couple of occasions. That's number one. Number two, that offensive line is better. And I think the insertion of Brian Stevens at center, and you and Greg Medea know better than I, you've seen Virginia in person more than I have. I think I've seen him five times. He's been big there.
Yeah, absolutely huge. And, you know, they opened the year with Ty Furnish at center. And honestly, a lot of the move was because Furnish was struggling with the snaps. But you're absolutely right that, you know, sometimes you back into the best decisions. We talked about Grant Wells getting hurt at Tech, and in comes Drones and everything that's done. And I think UVA with that offensive line, Furnish struggling with the snaps, they move Stevens over, and it hasn't just been that his snaps are good. He's brought a mindset and a mentality. The execution has improved, and it's really transformed what they could do offensively. You know, it's funny, David, they had that big game running the football against William & Mary. And yeah, I know we've said this, but you kind of watched it and you thought, okay, is this good news, or is this just you're playing an FCS opponent, so you manhandle them on the line and you run the ball? It's a pretty good William & Mary defense. I think we both thought maybe that they had found something legit. And I think in the weeks that have followed, they've really proven that there is an improvement there in that line. They found the right personnel. They're deeper. They're playing more guys. If a guy goes out, they can bring other people in. It's been probably the biggest area of improvement on this football team.
Yep. And it's one that's been an issue for how long at Virginia? Seems we talk about it every season. And remind me, Mike, where did Stevens transfer from?
He's a Division II guy.
Yeah, see,
so that's a huge find.
That's what I thought. And again, so you got a Division II guy. You got FCS transfers at Virginia Tech in Tooten and Felton. You can find talent in the portal from darn near anywhere.
Yeah, you know, there's certainly something to be said for maybe the Florida State model, where you go out and you get the name in the portal.
Five right. Cats, yes.
You know, Keon Coleman, you guys that we're looking at, we're like, wow, that guy's. But there is a living to be made going and getting these guys who were under-recruited, or who developed with some playing time and some good coaching. It almost, I wonder if we're not going to see, it reminds me of summer baseball, where summer baseball coaches all have programs that they like to get from because they know those guys are developing good players. And I remember, you know, being in Harrisonburg and covering the Turks, and I'd look at Bob Weiss's Turks roster and I'd say, what is that school? You have seven directionals and no name. And he'd say, yeah, but the pitching coach there is a guy that I knew from here, and he always sends me. And then you get to the end of the year, and the guy who would lead the Valley League in pitching was this guy from Northwest, Eastern, Central, Southern State. And you're like, wow, okay, you know something. I wonder if you're not going to see more of that, of coaches at the Power Five level saying, hey, you may not have heard about NCAA&T or Hampton or whoever it is football, but I've heard of them, and I trust the guys coming out of those programs.
Yeah, and you mentioned Florida State, but Mike, who was the ACC Defensive Player of the Year last season?
Right, you're talking about going small school, Albany, it doesn't get...
Jared Verse from Florida State, who was a CAA player at Albany.
Yeah, it doesn't get any more remote than playing your college football at Albany, and you're right, the star level. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting, another thing, as we go forward, of just, you know, how much talent is really out there. I think there was a point when the Power Five and some of the schools, those conferences expanding, where people said, well, there just aren't enough quarterbacks to fill out these rosters. And I think what we're seeing the portal kind of reveal is there are plenty of kids out there. They just need to get into the right situation.
Yep. Well, Mike, who's going to win?
I was hoping to duck that question.
I was too, but what's the fun in that?
You're right. It doesn't make for a good podcast. Dave, if you had asked me four or five weeks ago, I would have said Tech by three touchdowns. It felt like Tech had really put things together. You don't want to put too much stock in the last outing, but Tech did not look good in their last outing. Virginia, I think, is much better. I think this is going to be a really close competitive game. I still like Virginia Tech better. I do. I think the return of Cam Robinson for Virginia may help them contain the Hokies run game, but I think that overall, Drones and Tootin are going to get their yards. I think Pal Ryland and that Virginia Tech secondary, guys like Dorian Strong, I think they're going to expose the fact that Anthony Calandria, while he's improved greatly and is incredibly talented, he's still a rookie quarterback in a huge spot. I'm going to pick the Hokies in a close one.
Okay. Virginia, last I saw, was a 3-point underdog. Virginia's 8-3 against the spread this year. That's really good. As our buddy Aaron McFarland would tell you.
Yeah.
That is good odds. I'm gonna take Virginia, Mike, and in some degree because Virginia Tech's banged up on defense. Brent Pry told us yesterday that Kelly Lawson, who I believe is their leading tackler, is questionable for Saturday. They have been banged up at safety all season. That's a big issue in the run fit and in pass coverage. I too believe it's going to be very close. Virginia Tech has not won a one score game this season. If that they have won at least a single one score game every year since 2001. So this would be a remarkable season if they somehow do not have one of those games.
David, that's an amazing statistic, and that reminds me that it's going to be a something's got to give game because Virginia has played 6 one-score games and only won one of them.
Which was last week, right?
Yeah, so it is it's going to be an interesting either way, I guess, how these teams shake it out. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Curious what the crowd's going to look like, because certainly this game fills Scott Stadium, but it doesn't always fill it with UVA fans. And I imagine that will be the case again this year. There'll be plenty of Hokies maroon and orange in the stands, I would think.
Oh, 100% there will be.
Well, David, I am excited to watch this game. I'm looking forward to it, but it isn't the focal point of the ACC, right? The conference has moved on without Virginia and Virginia Tech. Florida State, who I think, no surprise, we expected to be there, is going to be in the championship game. They'll be facing Louisville, a team that we've both been really impressed with all year. But David, it's not necessarily the Florida State that we've all fallen in love with because of the injury to Jordan Travis. What do you make of, one, the impact of his injury, on this team, on what they can do, and then the impact of their hopes to make the college football playoff.
Well, Mike, first of all, you feel for the young man and the team, because that appears to be, well, it's definitely a college career ending injury, and you wonder what it does for his future. But if he were going to get hurt, if you're going to lose your quarterback, better to have it happen now than in the ACC championship game, because Tate Rodemaker now has not one but two games this week at Florida, and then the following in Charlotte in the ACC championship game against a quality Louisville defense, which, by the way, Anthony Calandria exposed. Now, he was borderline brilliant in that game, except for the interception. But anyway, so I think that really benefits Florida State. I know the Seminoles fell to number 5 last night in the CFP rankings, but I think that has more to do with what Washington did in winning at Oregon State and the accumulation of the Huskies' quality wins. Somebody's going to lose the Ohio State-Michigan game. If Florida State remains undefeated, Florida State is going to jump the loser of the Ohio State-Michigan game. I just don't believe that if Florida State closes the deal and is 13-0, that they will be excluded from the 14 playoff.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, because it will be decided on the field for Florida State, right? Yeah. It's totally unfair what happened. The injury, you feel for that whole program, and certainly for Jordan Travis. But like you said, if Florida State is still good enough without him, they're going to have the chance to prove it. First, yep, in a rivalry game against Florida.
And then on the road.
Yeah, and then on the ACC title game in a neutral site against Louisville. If they win both of those games convincingly, I don't think there's any debate. Yeah. If they struggle and get through, they're leaving the door open. Now, if it's up to me, if I were the king of college football, if they win them, I'm keeping them in the college football playoff, because they'll be undefeated, and they will have, my assumption is they're only going to get better the more they play with Rodemaker, figuring out what he can do. I think they've earned that chance. But I think if you win close games, and if you don't look good on offense, I do think it opens the door for the committee to say, okay, now we've evaluated this team minus Jordan Travis. Because I think, I heard Heather Danich talking on ESPN about this. It's the committee's kind of policy of, they're evaluating what you've done. They're not projecting. So yes, the Jordan Travis injury should not, and I don't think did, play any impact in them falling to 5. It's like, agreed, you said, with Washington. But when they play 2 football games, now the committee can say, we are now evaluating Florida State without Jordan Travis. Do we like what we see? So I think, we always talk about, you hate to say style points matter. I think Florida State, and this puts a lot of pressure on them and on Rodemaker, yes, I think style points are going to matter the next 2 games.
Yes, they absolutely will. And we saw that in the inaugural year of the playoff, 2014, when Ohio State, they lost Barrett, and then here comes Cardale Jones, and they go to the Big Ten championship game and win by 1,000, and that gets them in the playoff, and lo and behold, they win the Natty.
Yeah, yeah, and that was the prime example of, okay, what are you without your star quarterback? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're pretty darn good. And I believe Florida State can be, and I believe, there's a lot of pressure right now on Mike Norvell and that coaching staff, because I think this defense can carry them through. But again, I think they're going to have to be convincing. So they need that defense to set up that offense. They need complementary football, and have, yep, that final score look like, if I didn't know Jordan Travis was hurt, I need to look at that score and say, Florida State beat Florida, Florida State beat Louisville, and they're headed to the playoff. If it turns into 17-13, I think you're really leaving things dicey.
That's very true. And depending on results elsewhere, does Washington close the deal? What if Oregon beats what if Alabama beats Georgia? There's going to be a mess. That is for sure.
We kind of walked through what I think is the cleanest scenario.
Yes.
Right. Everybody stays undefeated. Somebody loses in that Big Ten game between Ohio State and Michigan. And it's pretty obvious what happens. There are a million iterations, David, of somebody winning, then losing, losing, then winning. I'm not convinced right now that Alabama is not one of the four best teams in the country, but what are the pieces ahead of them going to fall to earn it? Because right. That's a big component of college football playoff is, yes, how good you are, but did you earn it week in, week out?
Right. And Alabama's sitting there at 8.
Yeah, they got some ways to go.
Not like they're looming at 5. And Texas is ahead of them. And Texas beat them in Tuscaloosa convincingly, mind you. So some dominoes are going to have to fall for Coach Saban.
That one's fascinating to me because I think you can make a very strong case that Alabama is better than Texas at this point with where they've both gone. But how can you possibly say these teams played head to head and you're just going to ignore it and say it might not be wrong, but it's going to feel really wrong if it shakes out. But again, that's one of a million possible iterations. One interesting iteration, David, would be Liberty getting that group of six, because we've seen them now pop into the college football rankings. We saw JMU lose. Tulane has been good but wobbly. They already have the one loss, and they've been wobbly in a couple other ones. Do the Flames have a real shot of getting into a New Year's Six bowl game?
They do, simply because as of right now, Mike, they are the second highest ranked group of five team in the CFP rankings. They came out last night. Tulane is 23. Liberty is 25. And Pooh Corrigan, the NC State AD and chair of the committee, was very direct. He said, their strength of schedule is a serious issue, but they keep winning. I mean, they're one of six undefeated teams, and the other five are numbers 1 through 5 in the ring. You know, not that I'm comparing Liberty to the other five, but if Tulane stumbles, and Tulane absolutely could. Number one, they've got Texas San Antonio, which is also undefeated in the American, in the regular season finale. And then the winner of that game is going to end up in the conference championship game, most likely against SMU, ACC-bound SMU. And that's not a given either. Whereas Liberty, anything less than 13-0, I think, would surprise us at this point. They're on the road at 3-8 UTEP this week. And then they get New Mexico State in the championship game at home of Conference USA at home. Now, yes, did New Mexico State just crush Auburn? Yes, they did. But Liberty beat New Mexico State on them. Liberty should beat New Mexico State at home.
Yeah, David, if they do take care of business and win these two games, I think they absolutely deserve that spot. I think that New Mexico State win over Auburn really helps them.
Oh, it does.
Right. I mean, it tells you, okay, I mean, there are only a few points here for Conference USA when you're trying to compare them to other conferences. But if you look at Liberty's resume, which is not brilliant based on strength of schedule, they played two MAC teams, not great MAC teams. They won. And then
I can't believe you're banging on our boy, Coach Leffler.
I know. He's had some moments there.
7-5, Coach Leffler at Bowling Green,
hey,
Mike.
Great job by Lefty getting them into that middle of the pack, which I'm now banging on. Yes, but no, it's not. There have been some years where the MAC was sort of the national darling at that level, right. And that's not the case this year.
No.
So you got the two wins there. You've got the win over Old Dominion, which is the Sun Belt, which is the conference that is. The kitschy everybody loves, but Old Dominion's not the strongest team in that conference. I think it's very fair to question Liberty's strength of schedule, but if they win all these games, David, I think they're deserving of that spot.
Well, I want to see what Tulane does, because if Tulane closes the deal, Tulane's only loss, Mike, is to Ole Miss.
Yep.
Which is a top 10 team. If Tulane beats UTSA and then, say, SMU in the title game, then I've got no problem with the Green Wave going back to a New Year's Six for a second consecutive season.
Yeah, that program is a strong program.
It absolutely is. And would Liberty have a gripe? Yeah, they could. But I would be fine with Tulane staying ahead of them.
I think you're probably right. I just hate the idea that you can literally win every game and none of the spoils. Again, I'm not saying they should be in the college football playoff, but to win every game and not get that reward of the New Year's Six. But you brought up an interesting point in one of your columns, David, that the reward could be a matchup with JMU. Now, JMU's profile took a dip, right, after they lost their game to App State when College Game Day was there. But how great would a one-loss, potentially JMU, undefeated Liberty, those two fan bases are making the claim, and probably rightfully so, that those are the best teams in the Commonwealth this year, right? Maybe not the best programs long-term, all that, but the best teams in the Commonwealth of Virginia are Liberty and JMU. Their fans go back and forth on social media. It'd be pretty awesome if they had the chance to settle that one on the field.
It really would be, Mike. And I think both fan bases would travel. Mm-hmm. I think a bowl would be wise to try to arrange that. I think the TV ratings would be decent, you know, obviously be very regionalized. I don't know how many people in Dubuque are going to watch the Flames and the Dukes. But first of all, JMU's got to get into a bowl. And for that to happen, there can't be 82 teams that qualify for those 41 bowls. And I'm crazy enough that I'm charting this. And right now, there are 68 bowl eligible. So there's 14 spots available. 23 teams need to win this weekend to get bowl eligible. Can they essentially go 14-9? Can those mediocre 5-6 teams go 14-9 this weekend? If they don't, there's going to be a spot for James Madison.
You've done amazing research on that, so I hate to put you on the spot. Do any of those teams play each other? Do you know?
They do not. Oh, of course I know. I've got the games and the game times and the television networks right in front of me, Mike. Come on now.
Your remote's going to be getting a workout. Well, no, because you'll be working. So you'll be scoreboard watching, which is the cardinal sin, coaches tell you.
Yeah, well, not in the press box.
Yeah, it goes in the press box. I think that would be fascinating. I thought it was, you know, disappointing certainly for JMU to lose their undefeated season. It's interesting that the talk now is that they're going to abandon or at least slow the push for that legal action in terms of trying to get the waiver, which I think a lot of that had to do with being championship caliber. But it would still be a great story. And I think, David, JMU has gained some national notoriety because of their plight. I think it would make a very attractive bowl matchup.
I do. And, you know, part of the credit for that goes to ESPN and the fact that they showcase that program on game day. And, you know, when Pat McAfee is taking off his shirt and putting on a JMU tank top and riling up the masses, and, you know, that's what plays and that's what draws attention. And they got the largest crowd ever for game day and then had one of the biggest buzz kills you can imagine there in overtime against Appalachian State. And how close was that to a touchback instead of a touchdown?
Yeah, the game-winning touchdown, the ball's coming loose. And then, David, it was a remarkable comeback for JMU to even force the overtime with Surratt catching first the touchdown pass, then the two-point conversion.
Yep.
It really was a great game. It is the second time out of three visits now for College Game Day that JMU has lost when College Game Day is there. So there was a trade-off of you got that attention, but, man, a lot of distraction and certainly, I think we were kind of rooting for JMU I know you were as an alum, but for the storyline to pull through undefeated and see what happens. But it's been a great season for JMU, their second year at that level, and hope they end up in a bowl game. Hope you all have a wonderful Thanksgiving. David, I hope you and your family enjoys your Thanksgiving. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You can subscribe to Teal and Barber on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your favorite pods. And please consider supporting local journalism with an online subscription to the Richmond Times-Dispatch. You can find special promotional offers available at richmond.com. Today's show was produced by Dean Hoffmeyer and yours truly. For David Teal, I'm Mike Barber. Thanks for listening. Be healthy and safe. Happy Thanksgiving. And please join David and me again next week.